you, Steve. I see you got your ashes. I was glad to help in that respect. I do get nervous on Ash Wednesday. What the heck is wrong with me? I said heck.
Yeah, that's better. That's way better. I like that you, Christian gave you the Mumford & Son lyric during the blessing. He sang Shallow with me.
Whatever. I'm done with you. I'm supposed to turn my back on evil. So I'm turning my back on you.
Hey, you turned your back on me. Oh, I see what you're doing.
Dr. John Duffy is here. Weren't you just on the air last night?
I was on the air last night. I just haven't left. I've been waiting for you guys.
You were on with Frank Fontana and Kathy Hart.
Yes. Frank wasn't here. I was so bummed that Frank wasn't here. He stayed in Montana or Wyoming or somewhere out west.
He gets every 10,000 miles, he gets his biceps circulated. He gets them switched back and forth.
That does explain quite a bit.
Rotated.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. Why would he do that? He's been doing that for years. Anyway.
All right. John Duffy is a clinical psychologist, certified life coach, parenting and relationship expert. He does a podcast called Better with his wife, Julie Duffy. You can find it on WGN Plus or wherever your favorite podcasts are found. Your book is The Available Parent. Where do we want to start today?
So we can talk a little bit about video games and Fortnite, if you guys would like, because Fortnite has taken over a lot of our boys' lives in particular.
Very popular game all of a sudden.
Very popular game. Yeah. And it's hanging in there. A lot of games circulate, you know, where a new game comes out every year and you have to level up and it takes a month to play the game or 6 weeks. Fortnite takes about 30 minutes. It's kind of like a casino.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
You get this addictive.
Intermittent reinforcement. It's very addictive.
Yeah.
And I don't know if your guys play this one.
That's the occasionally.
Yeah. So a lot of parents will tell me, you know, instead of saying five more minutes, they'll say one more game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that buys them, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes, and it just takes up way too much of their time and their energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it is. It's
addicting.
It's addicting. I've struggled with whether that's a reality, but it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for people who have not played it, and I have to admit, I've never played it.
Yeah.
What's the goal? What are you shooting for?
So, effectively, you land on an island off of a bird or a parachute.
Yeah.
This sounds so stupid when you're like putting it out like this. It really does.
And even a kid will tell you, this isn't the best game. There are much better games, but this one is the one I'm drawn to.
Yeah.
And you've got 100 adversaries, 99 adversaries. And if you're the last man standing, you won.
Oh.
Yeah. Right. So, and effectively, you're killing people.
Oh.
You spend half an hour killing
people. And there's a llama, right, involved?
There's dancing llamas. There's different costumes you can buy. So it does what other games do in that it finds a lot of ways to tap your pockets as well.
Yeah.
And kids aren't really aware necessarily that, you know, the credit card's getting charged.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it especially violent or not violent or what? I know you're killing people.
It's violent, but it's not impressively violent.
Yeah.
Not relative to like a Grand Theft Auto or a lot of other games. No. Graphically, it's not the most impressive game. I think the fact that it's brief is what's got
guys
really hooked on it.
That makes a lot of sense.
Right?
Get in, get out, and then have another game.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where's the problem in this, John? It doesn't seem like there's a problem, or is there?
I think there is a problem.
What is it?
Just because so many kids I work with are consumed with it. This is when they get home. Right away, it's to the game controller, and this has been the case for other games too. But for Fortnite, man, this has really got them. It owns them, you know. And sometimes a kid can sit there and play for 6 or 7 hours because, just like a casino, every once in a while you get a win and you lose track of time. Yeah, and so if you come close to winning, a lot of kids will tell me, "Oh, I'm almost there. One more game, and I think I can win this thing."
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So unlike other addictions, I'm trying to compare it to things that we might get addicted to.
Right.
Like drugs or alcohol or another person or something like that. Is this a better addiction or not as good, or where does it stand?
I think it's a more treatable addiction.
Yeah.
And it can come from parents to an extent. And what parents can do, by and large, is they can fill in the gaps in the time. So a lot of times it's just too much time available to play this game, and it's the first thing kids do when they get home from school instead of the last thing they do when they're done with homework and all their extracurricular stuff and their chores and stuff like that. This tends to be the first thing, and it's so hard then to peel them away from the game, you know?
Yeah. And their excuses, I've been at school all day, I need a break.
Gotta wind down, I need some wind down time, Mom.
That's why I have a glass of wine or a beer or something.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, I get it. Not saying it's right.
Yeah.
But
But it's just so hard to put down. In fairness to them, it's hard to put down because you get close and you want to play it again, right. You know? So I think as parents, we have to put some structure and bones around it so that they're not playing all the time.
Do you find parents becoming the villain in this, the bad guy, because they're the voice of reason saying, you can't just play this all day. You have to do other things.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a problem?
Oh, yeah. The conflict is, in a lot of households, constant. Yeah. I mean, you know, like it is the daily screaming, yelling match, and it doesn't end. It's brutal. So that's why I'm desperate kind of for families to find a different way to approach this thing.
Right.
Because a lot of parents will, out a fit of anger, an understandable fit of anger, take the whole console or the controller, put it in the trunk of the car and say, you know, you're done with this thing forever. Right. And then 2 days later, they break and the kid's playing again.
I'm thinking back when I was a teenager. My mom and I fought a lot. Yep. I mean, nothing substantial, but, you know, I was probably not that easy to raise. So I can only imagine if she tried to take away my Candy Crush back then. I mean, there's already family strife. Add to it this.
Yeah.
And home is not calm and cool and collected anymore.
No, this adds a whole new, relative to the way we grew up,
sure.
This adds a whole new dimension to the conflict.
Yep.
Because this is something I want to do right now.
Yeah,
you know?
It makes sense. Dr. John Duffy's here. Your thoughts at 312-981-7200. Back after this, Bill and Wendy on WGN. Dr. John Duffy is in the studio with us. We're talking about a myriad of topics. Really quick, you're up on this cheese challenge thing. We've gotten a bunch of texts that want your take on what's going on with the cheese challenge.
Yes.
A quick explanation. Pete, all you need to do this is you have a baby.
Yes.
You put the baby somewhere, and then you yell to the baby, say cheese.
I don't even think that says
you just throw
a piece of cheese
on. You throw cheese at your baby.
Yeah, I think some people say cheese. Some people just throw cheese at their baby.
Stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it going to hurt the baby?
I don't think it's going to hurt the baby.
It's going to hurt the cheese.
It could do damage to the cheese. I am not a cheese expert, but from a developmental point of view, I think the babies are going to be intact. I'm not sure I fully get the purpose of this for entertainment value even, but I'm not worried about the babies.
They have been doing this in Wisconsin for hundreds of years. Nobody noticed. All of a sudden, it's nationwide and everybody's nuts about it.
Might be mandatory up there.
Yeah, I guess.
That is great parenting advice. And you have a conference next weekend, the Zen Parenting Conference. Tell us about that.
This is the coolest. For parents, this is somebody wrote put online that this is Lollapalooza for parents. This is a great event put on by very good friends of mine, Todd and Kathy Adams, at the Weston Lombard Yorktown Center. The keynote speakers this year are Glennon Doyle, who wrote Love Warrior, which is one of the best memoirs you will ever read, and Abby Wambach, who is the best female soccer player of all time, effectively. And they're married. They're a couple. They raised two daughters and a son together, I believe. And they're just awesome. They're speaking Saturday morning. So that's this weekend.
Yeah.
And there are tickets still available at zenparenting.com or zenparentingradio.com.
Excellent.
One of the two. Yeah.
It sounds
really,
like a good
really
time.
Great. Yeah.
We have to talk a little bit about the Michael Jackson documentary.
Yeah.
It was so disturbing. It was so gut-wrenching to watch.
Yeah.
A couple of quick questions. Question number one is this. I'm sure you at some point, John, have dealt with kids that have been in this situation where they're taken advantage of by adults, and then they end up for the rest of their lives taking partial blame in all this. They blame themselves for this.
Absolutely.
How do you work around that?
It's really tricky because you're right. Not only do they blame themselves, but they can look back and honestly say, I enjoyed a lot of that. That didn't feel traumatic in real time. That felt like an alliance. That felt like love.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look at these two men, they're
it was love to them.
Really was, right? So, you know, they kept this secret until he was gone, as far as I can tell. So, and I've worked with people in that situation, and the first thing really you have to get them to recognize is, oh, you were taken advantage of. It's kind of really taking that dream away.
Yeah.
This big part of their self-definition and saying, yeah, that was actually abusive, and you know, and it was ongoing, and it was calculated, and it was thought through, and you were a victim to that. And I'm not crazy about pushing people to own victimhood, but I think it's important that they recognize the reality of their situation, and then they can start to redefine themselves in a really healthy way, instead of, you know, Michael Jackson loved me, or this adult that I revered and that seemed to care about me really loved me in this way, in this inappropriate way.
Oprah kind of really made me understand in her Q&A afterwards with both Wade and Jimmy. as you mentioned, we think of abuse as torturesome and brutal and violent.
Yes.
And this wasn't.
Right.
And I'm very naive to this and ignorant, so it was. I learned a lot from that. And my question to you is, do you think now that Michael Jackson is gone, the healing begins? I just wonder if Michael Jackson was still alive, if they'd be on the path to healing right now as much as they are now.
I thought the same thing, Wendy. I totally agree with the question. Certainly for these men, watching them in real-time interviews, it does seem like it required him to be gone somehow for them to really speak their truth and heal. And, you know, I find myself oddly grateful to the documentarians for airing this out and letting them have all this space, these 4 hours, really to calmly tell their story. And I think, you know, kind of hearing yourself tell the story, and I run into this in therapy a lot. When you hear yourself say the words, then you don't need somebody to tell you, oh, this was awful, this was abuse, you went through something, you know, that you might feel good about in one way, terrible about in another way, and you've got to work through that conflict. You can feel that these guys are on the path toward doing that. Like, I have more hope for these guys now
yes.
than I would have 2 weeks ago.
Agreed.
There was a trigger moment for both of these men where they looked at their own children who were coming up on the age that they were when the abuse started from Michael Jackson, and all of a sudden that opened up some sort of a path in their brain
yeah.
as they realized, wow, that really is a very young child, and an adult could take advantage of that
sure.
child. Does it play out that way with some regularity?
A lot of the time. And if you don't get that moment, I often ask them to envision that moment. So if I'm working with an adult who had been abused, I often ask them, like, picture a 7-year-old,
yes.
picture a 10-year-old, you know, and does it seem right that they would have gone through what you went through?
Yeah.
And they can get there, but if it's your own child, you can think about it even more vividly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. As you watched this, John, you said you saw the whole thing
and
parts of the Oprah Winfrey. What did you make of it? I mean, Oprah said, oh, I'm going to get blasted for this, and the guys are getting death threats for
yep.
this. So what's behind that exactly?
Right. Well, I think it's the Michael Jackson phenomenon. You know, there was a New York Times piece the other day that said that before it ever came around, the Jackson loyals decided, you know, they were going to marshal their forces and really support their guy with
yeah.
everything they had and debunk these guys, which isn't that difficult because in the past, they've said this didn't happen,
right
under oath. And
right.
so, you know, like, well, this is a money grab or this is a fame grab or something like that. So I think part of what's going on nationally is that, you know, there's a lot of backlash against these guys.
We're seeing it with R. Kelly, too, that his true diehard fans absolutely refuse to believe that could be a reality, that somebody could be that big of a monster.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you can watch, I don't know if you had a chance to see the interview with Gayle King.
Mm. Wow.
You can almost feel him appealing directly to them, almost skipping over her directly to them, right? Because that's where, if he has hope of beating whatever these charges are, you know, that's the only opportunity I think he has,
yeah.
you know, is gaining some following amongst his loyals.
Your explanation on the parents looking the other way as this was going on, because that's the part that Wendy and I
can't comprehend.
It's so
that.
Hard to figure that part out.
And the boys, when asked, Oprah said, have you forgiven your moms? They're like, forgiveness does not happen in one fell swoop.
Yeah.
We're on our way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you make of that?
Which totally makes sense. As you watch, so I struggle. This was my biggest struggle as well, because putting myself in their shoes, I still couldn't envision, even with the culture he seemed to create, where we're all a family, we're all going to go to the ranch together, but, you know, your son and I, we're going to sleep together. You know,
yeah.
like that still feels like such an enormous parental leap. What it suggests to me is, because I don't know parents who are willing to put their kids in peril in their right minds.
Yeah.
And these women did these moms.
They weren't in their right minds.
Right.
They couldn't have been.
I think it just takes you, when you're talking about the most famous man in the world, it takes you out of your right mind to some extent. And you start to see stars and you realize, oh, maybe this is good for all of us somehow in the long run. And you find a way to look the other way. That's the only thing I can envision.
There was one, I think it was the Australian Wade, his mom and sister, they were at a hotel. I don't know if that's when they went to Hawaii or whatever. And the mom is talking and she said, yeah, my daughter and I stayed in one room and Wade was seven and spent the night. Why? No, our family stays together.
Absolutely.
Michael is down the hall and then the rooms kept getting farther and farther away.
Yeah.
I don't know how you'd ever agree to that, even if your kid's begging you.
Right. And
I suppose, can see him first thing in the morning, but sleeping, no.
And I agree with you completely. And there, so I'm hoping that people take away certain messages from this, right? And part of it is I think these men being so forthcoming gave victims permission to come forward.
Yeah.
And not really lose anything in terms of their self-identity. I also hope that parents learn something, right? Like, you know, that, yeah, even if you feel enticed and seduced by somebody as part of the family, if something doesn't feel quite right, trust that gut instinct.
This isn't fair to ask you this because we have 9 seconds left. Is this easier or harder for somebody to do who is not Michael Jackson? Because this sort of thing is still going on today, every day.
Oh, yeah.
Is it easier for somebody to do this or harder if they're not Michael Jackson?
I think it's trickier. I think it's harder because you're not dealing with one of the most famous people in the world and you feel like, boy, I was duped. You know, I should have been smarter
right.
about this even at 7 or 8 years old.
Yep. Yeah. All right. John, thank you.
Thanks,
thank you, guys.
I know this is a dark, dark topic, but it's horrendous because it's going on all the time. You would think as time goes on, we'd all be savvy to it and be more careful, but somehow.
And watch Abducted in Plain Sight. It's on Netflix. It's a documentary about the same thing with someone who's not famous, but it just talks about that grooming, which I never even heard of, but you get the whole family on board, and that false trust is there.
Yeah. Yep. It's powerful.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, guys.
It's Dr. John Duffy.